David, it is awesome to see you. We just were talking about golf and life proofing a swing. I'm not getting any younger and I love this game. So, and I hurt myself just recently. So, and you brought up the Medicus. So yeah. What's awesome about the Medicus? Well, tell everybody, what's the Medicus?
The Medicus, and I have the original. Yeah. Not, they've updated and added clubs. I don't even know what they have now. I think it's a 5-iron and it's a hinged club. That it's just a solid basic swing that no matter what you're doing, it's not designed, I'm guessing. I mean, of course, when they sold it with some pro or whoever, I forget, Davis Love, I think maybe back then, it's how old it is. It was just designed to be a simple, solid swing. So if you can keep it from unhinging on your, especially at the peak of your backswing and come back through solidly, it's just a good solid swing. So I know before I play, I just want to stay generally in the fairway, have fun, hang out, have good conversation. Maybe every now and then hit a shot that goes, wow, that makes me come back. And pray I don't hit too many that go, why am I playing this game?
It is amazing how old tools can be used and applied to do the work that we do today, whether it's on the golf course or any place else. And this is a old, tried and true tool. I mean, the way that hinge, the way it works is when you get up to the top, if you're, there's anything weird about your swing, you're out of position, it's going to fold on you. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you get into the swing too fast, got, you know, inside out, outside in, you get a slice or a hook and whatever it is, it will pick up those things. If you can keep the whip, you know, just whip it through a swing. It's a good solid swing. And you were just talking about life proofing your golf. You know, I think that's so much of what life is about, business is about, and in general, it's just good, solid processes, systems, tools, practices. It's not rocket science. We try to overcomplicate things.
Well, we've just made this the shortest podcast in the history of podcasts. I think we hit on it. Well, let's talk about all the stuff that happens in the middle of it. So in the middle of it, we get ourselves, everything gets complicated.
You just do it.
Well, so what happens in the middle? Like what do we, in the absence of tools, process, and systems, what do we do?
Flounder. We, in this, you know, in the work I do, and we're in a weird time. I mean, it's really a transitional time that we're all aware of, but so many of us are now out there walking around on our own. We had corporations, organizations, systems, structures that supported us. And this world has made it possible for us to go out and be our own, whatever we want to be. And we're now without those things. And so it becomes one of those experiences where like, oh, this is different than I expected it to be. And you're talking about that in between time, you know, previous to the last several years, I was a firefighter for 3 decades, in addition to business and entrepreneurship and other things. And it was really strange leaving a structure, a system. It gave me a schedule. It gave me a purpose and a meaning, and it gave me lots of a connection, gave me systems and structures and all the things. And then you retire, you leave that, and you have this other thing you want to build. And it's like, oh, now I am the leader. Now I'm the manager. Now I'm the one that sets culture. Now I'm the one that determines development and growth. And oh, these are weird experiences. So I think it's a new challenge that is an opportunity for development.
What's that transition been like for you?
It's interesting. It really, to put it mildly, to back up, at the same time I was a firefighter, my wife and brother-in-law started a business. We started a mortgage company. It was family business, all hands on deck. And one of the big reasons I chose to be a firefighter was it gave me 2 days off here where I'm at in Indiana. We worked 24 off 48. And I still didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. We accidentally fell into business. It was just something that developed an opportunity. So I wanted to be a husband and a father. I wanted to be at home. So being a firefighter was an amazing career, amazing experience, but it wasn't everything that I wanted to do. I always had other things I wanted to do. So when it came to the end of the fire department, it was opportunity. I was excited. That's like, yes, this is going to be out of the way so I can go do this thing. And then all of a sudden, all that stuff that I just talked about that you, oh, now I'm on my own. There's no system and structure. And so that's what it's been like. It's been a figuring out. At first, the experience when you leave something for me and what I've from reading I've done, there's that initial honeymoon period, like all change, generally, you shouldn't say all, but generally, you're thinking, I'm going to do this new thing. It sounds starts out really exciting and interesting, and it's an opportunity in this thing that's had all the problems that you focus on. I get to leave those behind. And so you go through that period, however long that lasts. I was ready to leave for various reasons I'm happy to talk about. 30 years was enough, but then it's oh, I've got to figure out what I'm going to do or how I'm going to do it, and all of that stuff I just talked about. And then it's a whole lot of wandering around, bumping into walls, making lots of mistakes. And it's really interesting for me. I struggle with confidence. I struggled with I when I went to work, I had I've never been famous, never had accolades, never had, but when you're a firefighter and you walk into a school or a tour group walks in, oh, you get recognition for a thing. Community knows you, everybody for this thing. Like many of us, we have the roles that we play. So people knew me as a firefighter. I was proud of the job. I did some important stuff, worked in the state capitol here in Indiana, and I was proud of it, but I was also done with it. So it's that tension between I'm done with this thing, but all of a sudden I've got to go out on my own. I wasn't working with a crew, a culture, a community, a system, I wasn't working with any of that stuff. So if I was going to go out and make mistakes, it was just on me. I'm standing out there. Oh, you in a crew, a team, a corporation, a business, a structure, you can kind of find ways to hide your weaknesses, hide your deficiencies, shall we say. And then you go out on your own, not only the things that you neglected to develop, you find new ones. Entrepreneurship, being a founder, building things, being an artist. I'm also an artist. I want to make this thing. I want to do this thing. Oh, and then all of a sudden, some people like it, some people don't. People have opinions and judgments, and it's weird. So I found out how much confidence I didn't have and needed to develop. And it's a fun adventure at the same time. It's a challenge if you grasp that mindset and get through that learning curve, last the transition, and you come out and you start seeing what you can do.
Why'd you get into fire service?
I went to university, studied art and psychology. I got to my senior year and I saw, all those arguments you have with your parents and people, adults at the time around you going, there's no future in this. And I thought I was going to be a graphic designer, moved to the big city and bigger city. And I started seeing what those people are actually doing. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And then the other psychology, I was going to be a graphic designer and I didn't want to do that. I saw those people and hung out with them in Chicago. Didn't like that. Then it was psychology was going to take some time. I didn't know. So I started working in lower levels at that time, mental health, hospital environment, and another nurse. And at the same time, I said I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. A nurse's husband that I worked with, her husband became a firefighter. And I was like, oh, I like physical stuff. I like challenges. I like helping, taking care of people. Let's go do that. I get 2 days off, benefits. I had a new young family at the time, so it had structure, and my dad was an engineer, and so I grew up with a whole sense of practicality. I wasn't just the crazy artist that just wanted to go paint. There was that tension between practical and real, practical and imagined things I wanted to build and make. So enough practicality. I could be home, figure things out, hang out with my sons. I wanted to be a husband and a father more than anything else. So I kind of grew up in an environment that was kind of not the most pleasant place to be. And so I wanted to make up for that. So it fit all the boxes. I get lots of time off, good benefits, challenge, serve, take care of people, something you could be proud of, and be home, and then family.
How did fire service help you with confidence?
It's, you know, as we're out here as entrepreneurs and individuals trying to figure out whatever it is you're trying to do on your own. The easiest example is I don't like the cold, even though I live in the Midwest, and I don't like getting up in the middle of the night. And this applies to confidence and fear and other things. In the middle of the night, in the middle of the winter, in a blizzard, you're up and out the door in less than a minute is the plan, because you have a group of people, a responsibility, a whole lot of momentum carried you forward. It covered up for the lack of it. Compensated for the lack of interest of getting out into a blizzard at 2 o'clock in the morning. There
Okay.
was no choice. I didn't. And now, as an individual, you know, you kind of do I want to get up now in the middle of the night when it's cold? No. Same way with fear, same way with doing things that I didn't want to do, hanging off of buildings and other challenging things that we did. The group carried me forward. The job carried me forward. Community carried me forward. Responsibility. You show up, you've got a big red truck and lights and siren and a uniform and a whole lot of people looking at you when you show up, going, hey, provide a solution. So, for all those reasons, that and confidence was mixed up in there.
What lessons do you take away from operating in fire? And I've never served in any way, shape, or form. So I talk about it in
Right.
public service, fire service, military service. So when I if I'm am, is it right to refer to it as fire service?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so and what are some lessons that come from like basic early training that still apply to what you do today when it comes to fire service?
Move.
Okay. What do you
I
mean?
don't know. I don't care if you don't know, move. I heard that from the beginning. Well, I mean, when we started. To date myself, there was no GPS. There was no, it was a, you know, I grew up listening to Johnny and Roy and Emergency. And, you know, it was kind of like that. You get a piece of paper with an address on it, and you got a map on the wall, and you got a map book. And sometimes you get lost, literally get lost in neighborhoods when you don't know where you're at the middle of the night and you're trying to figure out, or addresses don't match, or things are move. Keep moving, figure it out. Is that right or wrong? Just keep moving. Same way with a medical, because I was also a paramedic EMT. We did medical stuff. It's always what's your next best guess? Keep figuring it out. You don't necessarily know. It's always solving a problem. And so that was a key lesson that I learned.
Why do people struggle with solving problems or like or struggle pro let's actually let's go with this moving thing. Why do people get stuck? Why do they struggle with moving?
I think I know I can speak for myself and what I've observed of other people is you don't want to look foolish. It depends on the degree and the seriousness of the situation, obviously. You don't want to make mistakes. You don't want to look foolish. You don't want to not know. We grew up needing to know. I mean, we were always tested. We were always judged by what we did or didn't know. We didn't really learn problem solving from make lots of mistakes and figure it out. Make lots of mistakes. You know, I mean, it's common conversation now. It wasn't then. It was you either know or you don't know. And if you don't have confidence in yourself to say, I don't know this right now, generally as a team, if one person didn't know, you go, hey, I didn't know that. I don't know. What do we do? And it's a collective conversation, real time, and you just keep solving the problem. It's a four is better than one, typically, you know. Or two of us, but as individuals, how comfortable are you going, I don't know, to your kid, to your somebody that's hired you as a fractional, somebody that, you know, your potential client? We're always, many of us are always feeling that judgment of how confident are you to say, I don't know? How confident are you to say, I'll figure it out? How confident are you to realize that? Part of what we need to do now, especially now in this world we're living in, is keep learning. How good are you at learning? Just taking on a new subject and that difficulty of I don't want to do the effort. It's really comfortable where I'm at now. Just doing what I've been doing, it's grooved. It's like a golf swing. I mean, you've been talking about changing your swing, and if you any of us, we try to change something about what we do, a routine, a pattern, the way we move through our day, our life, our job, whatever. It always requires more effort, more energy, more mistakes. And how comfortable are you doing that? And it's unexpected. I mean, it's not necessarily a muscle that we practice unless we go out of our way to do it. So I think that's depending on your personality, depending on, each of us are different and have a different skill set where we arrive, but those are the main factors. I don't want to not know. I don't want to make mistakes. I don't want it to be hard. We're designed to do simple, keep it easy, do the same thing. I know what I'm doing. Be our own worst enemy, get in our own way.
It's taken me a long time. It took me a long time to kind of realize the value and the importance of being comfortable with saying, I don't know, followed by, I'm going to go figure it out, or we'll figure it out, or I'll find someone who can help me figure it out. And that I don't know is really, really powerful. Because before I would come into a room and be like, hey, I know this stuff. This is my area of expertise. This is my domain. I'm going to cover that up and present this level of confidence. And really what it is ends up being is this giant shell, and be really comfortable saying, you know, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. And there's a lot of stuff that I just don't know. And we're going to learn, and we're going to fail, and we're going to do all of those things. And I know this is a military thing, but you embrace the suck. You realize that there's just going to be some hard things that you work through, and you will work through because you are resilient.
The closest similarity or the closest characteristic that suck you're talking about, and that I don't know, and the effort, and some people like to go to the gym and love to work up a sweat, love to hurt. I love the pain when I'm tired and a workout was good. I like being covered in sweat and done. It feels good to be exhausted. Some people are just not in a million years go get sweaty or exhausted. Yuck. We're on different continuum, so that when am I going to adopt that character? Is the suck worth it to me? Is what I want to accomplish that important?
The thing that you just highlighted for me that I think is really powerful is everybody's suck is different.
We arrive with a different skill set, a different experience, a different personality.
So let's talk about the transition. Like firefighter, fire service for 30 years, and then you shift into something different. How much of your identity did you feel like you were losing in that process?
I prefaced that earlier story with the fire department wasn't necessarily my first, choice. It wasn't a lifelong. So I didn't immerse myself completely.
Okay.
I won't say that I didn't get pleasure out of and identify myself as that, but I was very aware that it was coming to an end, and I was very aware that I was other things, and I had been other things and done other things and wanted to do other things. And that kind of drove the next things I wanted to do. So I didn't lose a whole lot, although it's taken several years before I don't feel like a firefighter anymore. It
What
used
is
to
that?
be.
Yeah, what does that feel like? What do you mean you don't feel like a firefighter? Like, what's an example of feeling like a firefighter versus not feeling like a firefighter?
Walking into a restaurant and automatically looking at fire extinguishers, automatically looking for exits, automatically thinking about fire load, thinking, it's for me as a professional firefighter, I wanted to do my job well. So everywhere I lived in my district and I worked in my district, and I mean, we worked and had family and life in the same district I worked. So everywhere I went was a part of my job. There was an address, there was a road that I made sure that when I moved to a certain part of town, there was a road that was a one-way road in with a certain address and certain numbers, and there's only one way in. It's only one lane wide. So in fire service, you got to have an order of arrival. There's an SOP, a standard operating procedure, and you have to arrive in the right order because there are certain jobs that have to be done depending on the vehicle. See, I can even go back there now. It's that. So if you're thinking about pre-planning, a lot of fire service is about pre-planning and preparing and being prepared for the predictable, which was uncertainty, but you could predict that it was going to happen at some point. So just things like that, quirks of trying to do your job and how you see the world. We filter the world, but based on what's priority to us, what we value most. And for me, it was trying to figure out how to do my job well and go home the next day. And the people I worked with, make sure they got to go home too. Because it came with, had its risks.
The one of the stories you've shared with me, and I forget exactly where it was shared, if it was inside the Phoenix Club or it was outside of the Phoenix Club, but it was this, the as you're going into a room, always moving things out of the way because you know at some point in time you're going to have to get out of the room, which is this planning, this was seeing things in advance, this kind of looking through that stuff. Why is that an important thing in fire service? And then we'll start to shift into kind of what you're doing now and where things are going. But why is that an important piece?
Time, efficiency, effectiveness. You don't know what you're going into. So I want to make it as simple to get out of wherever I'm going into so that the priority is always going to be time. The controllable that I can control is time. So if I'm efficient going in, I can prepare, I can practice. I mean, when you know what the end looks like, you start with a vision, you know where we're going to go. I've done this enough. I'm a professional. I know how this is going to end. And even if it doesn't end exactly like that, I can always put back the furniture. Just to fill in, if anybody's wondering, the idea was on especially emergency runs, medical runs, when we would go into a house, depending on who was first in and what was the run, people would go directly to the patient. But then others of us, as we would come into the house or the environment we were in, knew that we had to get a patient out. And depending on the run and how we were going to get them out, we were pre-planning. So as we moved in, we moved furniture out of the way because we knew that to come out, this furniture was going to be in the way so that when it was time to leave, we could do that quickly. And then if we didn't need to, we can still put it back. So if you start with the end in mind, I mean, Covey and everybody, I mean, it's all, are we going back to basic solid knowledge? It applies in a lot of places.
So let's talk about what you're doing now in this kind of transition and what you're building. Self-mastery is important to you. What is it?
Self-mastery, it's that we talk about in leadership, that's there's the self, there's the leader, there's the culture, and the results. It's all a structure. But when we get out into this world, I was talking about it earlier, oftentimes when we're moving through life, we just depend on a lot of other structures and systems to set up all that culture and results and development and all the clarity and the priorities and all those things. And as I moved through my life and dealt with confidence and dealt with things I wanted to create, I needed my own training and development. I needed my own culture. I needed my own priority system, clear values and, vision statements and missions and all the stuff that structures give us. You needed that. I needed that for myself. And as I met other people doing things, lots of people with great ideas, frozen, stuck, not moving, because they weren't clear on a lot of these elements. And so, as we've moved in time, and right now the world is changing like it is, and so many of us are independent in a variety of ways, doing independent work, I'm meeting a lot of people that are struggling trying to put that structure into place. So, self-mastery is self-leadership and self-management. And I learned it in the fire department. I mean, if you walk into a situation, it's just you and the patient, you and the situation, you and the environment. Have you prepared for this moment? Are you very clear on your priorities? It was kind of fun. I was happened to come across James Clear tweeting something, and he was asking a question. It sounded like something he was going to write for a book, and he was talking about this idea. And we were started tweeting about preparation and being prepared. We can predict the unpredictable. I mean, we're living in an uncertain world where we don't know, none of us know what's happening next. We like to live in this illusion that we do know, but we really don't. And it's even more blatant now. But we can predict that there are going to be problems. And how prepared do I want to be? So that requires self, what self-mastery, self-leadership. It's an old concept, the Stoics and Stoic philosophy and all of that. The only controllable I have in this crazy world, whether it's my family, whether it's talking to you, whether it's business, is knowing who I am, how I want to show up. I have my culture. I know what my values are. I'm doing the work to show up in the way that I need to show up. So that's self-mastery and why it's critically important to me.
How can people, folks who are listening to the conversation, how can we get better at building out those processes, those systems, those tools? What are some things that we can do if we want to get better at this? We want to begin the path toward, or start the journey toward self-mastery. Where do we start?
Big part of it, the biggest, simplest, and we've been talking about simple answers, is responsibility. Jocko Willink, who talks about radical responsibility. It's so much of the conversation is responsibility. I'm responsible for my life. We're living in a world, we'll get to the world of all that's going on in so many ways. People trying to control other people. People trying to getting angry and frustrated at the world out there isn't the way I want it to be. And yet you're not managing yourself. I mean, and so radically, it begins with radical responsibility. And then second, the second part of it, that this confidence thing and what I learned in my growth through the fire department, the things I wanted to do, was the fact that I can change. You were talking about identity and getting stuck. Another way we can get stuck is we don't know how to be any way other than we've been. But the new thing that we want to do doesn't necessarily match who we've been. And it can be very easy to come to an end or a hoped beginning or a new idea or something and go, there's a mismatch here. I'm not capable yet of what I need to do. I don't have the characteristics. You know, we were talking about getting up and sweating, doing the workout, doing the hard, embracing the suck. Is that part of my character? Is that part of who I am? Is that something I embrace? Is that necessary to do the new thing I want to do? It begins to realize first that I'm responsible. Second, that I can change. It's part of who we are to innately adapt and transform. And this sense of identity, we can choose.
It seems like folks fall into the trap of wanting to change others rather than change self. Why?
It is amazing. Let's think about it. Because I said I'm an artist. I imagine things. I create art. I love imagination. I can geek out on creating artists and all kinds of that stuff. But I also know the practical necessity of having answers. I faced life and death situations. I've been in the middle of tragedies. I know the need for practical. I grew up an imaginative, creative kid with an engineer father. I know the tension between practical and imagination. So we can imagine, it's just part of innate human capacity to imagine something new. But throughout our lives, from the beginning, the world has been telling us we can only, I mean, from a neurophysiologic practical standpoint, from the beginning of our lives, we've been taking in, we only take in information through our ears. And our eyes mainly. I mean, we can touch and taste, but mainly we're looking out at the world. And that world is telling me from the beginning who I am. Got a new grandson, getting ready to have a second grandchild. And you watch a child, an infant, newborn, try to figure out the world. There's all sensory input. And so the world from the beginning is telling us who we are. And we've never really needed to understand ourselves, our internal experience, and we don't have a lot of conversations about you being an independent individual. Our life is about people telling you you're a firefighter or you're a this or you're a that or you're. My mother always told me I was shy. So the whole world is telling us. And at the same time, we're always looking out at the world. I mean, I'm looking at you, you're looking at me. So it seems like all of the control over our life is out there. If I'm not, while at the same time, we're having an internal feeling experience. We just are. I mean, it's just a fact of life. You feel good, you don't feel good. You move toward, you move away. basic neurophysiology of being a human being, any creature. Move away, move toward. It feels good, doesn't feel good. Simple. It always feels like that feeling of wanting to move away or something inside that I don't like, I'm seeing you and I'm not feeling good. So it must be you that is the problem. And if we grow up in a world where everybody is looking out, doing the similar thing, seeing other people, it hasn't been part of human tradition. It wasn't in my world to go, oh, I'm responsible for how I feel. Yeah, your parents would say you're responsible, but the whole time they're telling you what you are or aren't, or we don't necessarily haven't needed to up until now be independent thinkers, take responsibility, and realize that we can deliberately change ourselves. The job changes me, gives me an identity, gives me a culture. My parents, my family, my kids tell me what I am, my wife, my relationship. The world is always telling me. And so I think it's a major conversation that we need to begin to have is you have been looking out your whole life, but it's inside of you.
It's pretty powerful when you start to kind of shift perspective. Like in technology, a lot of people will talk about world building. So from a software development, software engineering perspective, and I'm not a software developer or software engineer. I've sold these products in the past.
Right.
You think of world building, future building. You think of kids using tools like Minecraft, world building, future
Right.
building. For me, when I was a kid, it was Legos and Lincoln Logs and an Erector set. Like you go in and you build these things. And sometimes you take them apart and see if you could rebuild them back. And every once in a while, you've got some extra parts. And we go through this process of saying, okay, well, there are some of us who start to feel comfortable with this testing and iterating. And then there are others who will go and say, I'm not worthy. I'm not a builder. I was born to do this, or I'm going to go to school to do this. And that identity, I'm stuck in this thing. If I'm stuck in this thing, what are some questions that I can start asking myself to start to open up my eyes to the idea that there's something more on the other side of that pain, that challenge, that resistance that you work through?
That's why I'm glad we're having this conversation. That's why I'm an open book and love these conversations. Is a big part of it is just that beginning that awareness, depending on where you're at on that awareness cycle, aware, unaware, it's beginning to understand this, just like this idea that for your whole life, somebody's been telling you, for your whole life, the world out there has been initiating feelings on the inside. The idea that neurophysio, I love depending on the science, it helps me understand just like planting a carrot seed. You till the ground, you put it in there, and there's nothing there. And I have to trust the science, the understanding, the conceptual understanding of it that I can leave it there and just take care of it. It's gonna be in a similar way. If we need to begin to move forward in some way that we're feeling stuck, know that at some point in life, we get comfortable. If somebody gives you an accolade at some point in your life and you're like, hey, this feels good. I like this. I don't want to leave this. As a firefighter, it felt really good when people, kids are like loving what you do and asking questions and crowding around. It feels good to do the things we do. There's nothing wrong with that until it stands between you and what the next thing you want to accomplish. So it's this conversation of awareness. It's okay if you've had some accolades, had something that really feels good and it needs to end or it's over or you realize you're stuck and it's not enough anymore. It's okay that it's over. It's okay that it's ended. It's okay that you're not satisfied anymore. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong. We often, it can be easy to not share with each other. The world's full of a lot of people that are oppressed and having a lot of struggles. And there's not a lot of places where we can have these kinds of conversations where you say, hey, I'm just not feeling it right now. This isn't working for me. I'm not feeling good about the situation I'm in. You're not broken. It's just part of being human. And those kinds of comforts to begin that process of that's just how we're designed to stick with the simple. our brain is a expensive machine. Our forebrain that separates us from all the other creatures, it requires a lot of energy and information. If you go to school, I mean, if you've gone to school or you've learned something new and you get tired or you've had a hard day at work or a hard effort at something intellectually and you're exhausted and you just, why am I exhausted? I've just been sitting thinking all day. It's because it's very expensive to think. I love listening to athletes talk, for example, and that transition between college sports and professional sports. And you listen to them talk about how all of a sudden, at some point in their professional career, the game slowed down. They stepped from college to professional level, and it's so fast and overwhelming. It's because their brain is working overtime, trying to figure out, and all those things that they assumed and took for granted are now costing psychological energy. And it's making it really fast and really hard. It's not until they absorb it. So all of these components, if somebody's trying to get started, is understanding you're not broken, that you can change. You're not the same person. None of us are same people we were 5, 10 years ago as we are today. We're not going to be who we are today, even though it feels like it. A lot of research, a lot of books are talking about all of this. So we're malleable. We're defaulting to a lot of human characteristics. Finding communities, the Phoenix Club's a great place to start. Finding other people, listening to conversations like this. A critical, simple way to start today is, remember earlier I said we're always taking information in and it makes it seem as though that world out there is influencing us. You get to choose what you're paying attention to. I hang out with people like you and people in the Phoenix Club and other places. I intentionally choose the people I'm around because they're moving forward. We oftentimes default to the people that we're around. So begin to choose who you hang out with. Choose what you're listening to, the podcast you're listening to, the music you listen to, the books you read, media that you take in. Choose. Stop the stuff that makes you feel worse, even though it might viscerally feel good to rage against the world right now. Start changing, putting in the good new stuff.
The same thing happens with a lot of people will talk about this in the context of nourishment. So fuel, the kind of food we bring in. If we bring in good fuel, if we eat the right things, we tend to feel better. There are things that I eat that taste really good that I don't feel as good after
Right.
I've eaten them. There are things that I eat that where I feel great. There are times where I get enough sleep and I feel great. And there are times when I take in the right information and I feel great. I feel that power of the things that are coming in. Remember to choose, just like David is saying, choose what you're fueling yourself with, whether it's fueling with information, fueling with food, fueling with recovery, fueling with movement. Choose those things wisely and be comfortable with the idea that just because it's okay for somebody else doesn't mean it's okay for you. Like my body, as much as I like carbs, my body doesn't handle carbs as well as it once did. So, and before I was in one of those like fat phobic kind of things where I was
Right.
peeling skin off of chicken breast. We talk about time phase. When I was in elementary school, we used to get under our desk in case there was a nuclear attack.
Yep, I remember those days.
That was the thing that we did, right? So we've dealt with these stressors that have always been out there. The inputs are so much faster now, though, because we walk around with this computer that's in our hand, and it can bring that input right to us. And you shared a story. I forget the last time you shared it or where you shared it last, but you talked about, was it your arm that was on fire?
Yeah.
Yeah. So your arm was on fire. Tell the story. Okay, so your arm's on fire. You're a firefighter. Your arm is on fire. What
Yes,
did you
my
do
arm's on
next?
fire. Well, I mean that the James Clear kind of shifted it a little. It's Archilochus from 600 BC. We don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training.
Sure.
Ancient wisdom. You'll hear it spoken by SEALs and other people. I'm not at work. This is not a firefighting thing. So that feeds into it because after I'm burned, I'm not feeling real good about myself. I caught myself on fire. It's kind of a long story. It involves rain and arrogance and a little, a little stupidity on my part, but it saved my life. That's another whole second half of it. But I was on fire. I lived in the woods where I was at, a giant pile of brush, fuel, caught my clothes on fire. It just totally overwhelmed me. I was on fire. There was nobody home, nobody around, nobody, nothing. And I've been a firefighter at that point for 28 plus years, and I'm on fire and it's not going out, but it wasn't. It took a moment before I stopped, dropped, and roll. How many times in that 28 years did I teach stop, drop, and roll? But it's falling back to my training. Your brain doesn't, when it's defaulting to the automatic, it needs to default to the automatic when there's a problem, and falling back on that training, stop, dropping, and rolling is a critical lesson in all of this. Is we can think we want something new when you're struggling. This is another good thing for somebody. It's if you're in a situation, we can imagine. It's easy to imagine. I can imagine all kinds of amazing, wonderful things. But we've been talking about us as human beings defaulting to some mechanisms that we're just born with as human creatures. And one of those is we default to what we've been trained to. And if your training, your sense of identity, the characteristics you've got, what you understand and know, how you move through your day, how productive or not, and all the different aspects of your life have produced the results that you currently have. If you imagine a new amazing thing, whatever, a new business, new relationship, new whatever, if you're struggling to follow through, you're struggling to accomplish this new thing, it's because you don't have the training built into your automatic system yet to default to it so that it's automatic. In your golf swing, when it's automatic and it's just grooved, that's falling to your training. That's why you sit on the driving range doing it over and over and over. We all do that. It's just part of being human. So that was it's a great analogy. It was amazing to me what it took. Be on fire for me to even took a moment to stop, drop, and roll.
How did it save your life?
Later on, they would find that I had clots in my left femoral artery. And if they hadn't found it, I would have woken up dead one day and they wouldn't have known why. And so they said, thankfully you were here. And so I had other surgery to deal with that blood clot. And it saved my life. So I was embarrassed at first and then I was grateful.
How much did it suck? Like, how much grief did you get?
A lot.
That you didn't stop, drop, and roll right out of the gate.
Well, I mean, that wasn't, I was on fire. That just stopped the burning that was already taking place. But I got grief from burning myself in general in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. So think about it. You have a negative situation that happens. Like, being on fire sucks. Even when those things happen, they can become things that we can laugh about and move forward. Why do some people deal with trauma and just close down and like not work through it, like feel like a sense of guilt associated with negative things? Like, do you see that with people you've either worked with or have had a chance to be around, where the trauma hits and they let it sit too long?
I've seen lots of versions of how people, it's interesting to see the different variety of ways that people respond to unexpected things, tragedies, difficulties, problems. And I think it applies to people listening and the idea of resilience. And we're talking about resilience. We each innately have a level of resilient characteristics in our personality. Some people are just, some people just bounce off the walls and don't care and going all out. And some people just don't, and some range in there. And I think at some point growing up, we each had different models of how to respond to or react to traumas, difficulties, problems, challenges, the words you want to use for unwanted things. So our nature, what we've been around, what we've learned to do, maybe we didn't grow up with somebody teaching us how to be more resilient. Maybe we didn't value it. I know as an entrepreneur, you've really got to The challenges you're going to face, the problems, the questions, the uncertain, you've got to develop some resilience and some practices and some things. So I think people get stuck for a variety of reasons, but these are all characteristics that you can develop intentionally, deliberately. And that comes back to that whole idea of, you can choose. You're not fixed. That's the amazing thing. To me, that was the good news that I finally came to in life in general, and why I do what I do is we are changeable. And when you get a framework to work through, you can make changes that you want to make. It's not easy, but it's why we need to be able to change in this world. And the good news, if anybody takes anything away, you can change. You're not fixed, no matter what your past history was. Oh, you were a minute ago, real quick. This idea of this burn, for example, I didn't grow up in a household that was optimistic or looked for the positive or anything like that. But I was able, it was a great learning experience because I've been doing this work and practicing this work. And instead of saying, the number of people that came and had nothing but negative stories to tell me about the burn and about burns and how terrible the situation, I finally had to tell people, this is a no negativity zone. I'm sorry. We're not having negative conversations. I'm not gonna happen because I needed every ounce of positive thought I could get. It's that kind of stuff. It's people get stuck because it's easy to talk about negative things. It's easy to use negative words.
The word that I would go back to that you said earlier today in your initial training that still applies is move, move, move. And you will figure out, am I moving forward or am I moving backward? The negative stuff will bring you backward. Stop and start moving forward. Start moving forward. And I think a lot of people get caught up with this whole challenge of moving forward, because they think that they have to move in a specific direction in order to move forward. And you do, but remember that direction will change. If I'm going to drive from here to Phoenix, or excuse me, I'm in Phoenix. So if I'm going to drive from Gilbert to Phoenix, I'm going to move a little bit north and west. If I'm going to drive to Indiana, I'm going to move north and east. Those are two completely different directions, but I'm moving forward in each of those. And as you go through that process, the frameworks, and start thinking about how do I reflect on the progress that I'm making relative to the objective that I'm trying to accomplish or the transition I'm trying to work through, you will build confidence in the idea of movement.
A lot of people want to be confident in knowing. And I think I know how to do something. I think we've cheated ourselves in this idea of confidence. I'm confident because I can do X, Y, or Z. I'm confident because I know X, Y, or Z. What if I'm confident because I'm capable of figuring things out? What if I'm confident because I can grow and change? I'm confident because I can take on challenges and I enjoy it. What if we can shift? I'm confident because I know I've done some stuff in the past. I don't know what I'm doing right now, but I know I can figure it out.
And that is the type of confidence that moves things forward. It's that confidence of, hey, no, I'm going to figure it out. I know I've got resources that I can go to. I know I can go places and learn. I'm confident in my capability, that think critically, to think creatively, to go out and solve problems, to move things forward. And unfortunately, a lot of folks will get that message that you talked about when they're younger, which is, hey, you're not smart, you don't know math, you're not good at science, you're much better at English, you're whatever. And we haven't cursed and sweared yet on the podcast, so I won't right now because I don't want to call it explicit. Whatever, go fuck yourself. Like, that is, you can move on from this stuff. Like, the change can happen as you start to do it. It's super powerful stuff, David. Go ahead.
Real quick, what I oftentimes we see performance. We see, you may have heard the story of Kobe Bryant. A coach sees him, he's in an event. He's like, Kobe, can I come watch you practice? Kobe's like, yeah, you can come watch me. I start practice at like 3:30, 4 o'clock. The coach thinks I'm going to be there ahead of time. He gets there a half an hour early. Kobe's already practicing. And then he watches him quietly, and Kobe gets done. And he goes, and Kobe, the whole time, he's doing the fundamentals. And he's like, Kobe, you know, I mean, I'm expecting to see something else. And why? He goes, why do you think I am and can do what I can do? I know the fundamentals and I drill the fundamentals. Fundamentals executed with excellence win championships. It's simple basics that we were talking about. And I don't want anybody listen to me ever communicate or see a finished product without knowing the work that goes in behind it. The Kobe Bryant showing up at 3 o'clock in the morning, the swings at the golf course, the swimming, like your son, the morning practices and the 2-a-days and all the work that goes into performance that people see, confidence that people see. I was so lacking in confidence that I took a challenge from one of my coaches that say, stand in the mirror and tell yourself 10 times twice in the morning, once in the morning, once in the evening, I love you. Look at yourself in the eye and tell yourself I love you. And then third person singular, it's science, Sabrina Williams, all the performers, SEALs, other people, third person singular, when you're talking to yourself, is a more effective tense to use. It's been studied. That's why I was using it. But any confidence you may perceive in this conversation, I can't tell you the depths of lack of confidence when I was standing on my own saying, look, as an artist, look, I made this. Or me as a business owner saying, look, this is what my business is. Or on a sales call, this is what the cost, the value is. This is the program. This is it. Whatever situation you're in, drilling the fundamentals when nobody else is looking is where performance is made. Anybody that appears to have talent, there are those of us at different things that have talents, but even those talents undeveloped with the fundamentals drilled when people aren't looking is what it requires. But I want people to know that what you want to accomplish is important. It matters to us. I think a lot of the struggle, the difficulties, the conflict, the world that we're living in is because a lot of people are walking around feeling like their opinion doesn't matter or they haven't learned to live from the inside out, haven't learned this self-mastery concept. And if I can't change myself, I'm damn it, I'm gonna change you because my world sucks right now and I need you to change in order for me to change. I mean, in order for me to, what if I don't care whether or not you change? What if I love and care about you and I want you to succeed and I want you to accomplish what you want to accomplish? I'm taking care of my stuff, I'm responsible. I think that's the world I want to live in because we're all better off when we're doing that. Can you imagine if leaders in our country, leaders in the world, got their egos out of the way and said, look, I don't have anything to prove. I want to see what we can build. I want to see what we can accomplish. I want to see what we can do. I don't need to prove the other person wrong.
I imagine it every day, and I build toward it every day. And I know you do as well. Like we build because we care. We build because we can. And we build because we know that it starts with self and builds outward. You earn the right throughout each of those processes. And it's whether it's the make your bed in the morning or it's the clean up your room, or it's you continue to work outward, and if everybody does that, all of this stuff starts to take care of itself. That's the thing that I like. You mentioned a couple of times about the crazy times we're in and the all of the noise and everything else in the world. I don't know if I just live in that meme of, everything's fine where the fire is just all over the place and I'm just kind of blissfully going out and drinking my coffee as we're working through it. But there's a value and a benefit to being able to go through and not be, look through the world through rosy colored glasses and say everything is fine. Like that's not realistic, but realize that I am going to control the things that I can control. I'm going to be present in the each of those interactions. I'm going to continue to move forward. I'm going to make an impact and reflect and then adjust and move forward. And when you start to get that level of control, that level of self, that self-confidence, that sense of self, it's amazing what will happen around you and what can happen around you and the impact that you can have on others.
That's why firefighters, for example, are able to stand in the middle of a tragedy. I mean, I've been there when hundreds of people are in the middle of a highway and all kinds of mayhem is going on, and you're one of four people, and people are looking at you, going, okay, what now?
Wow,
I've
yeah.
been there, done that. That's the self-mastery you're talking about. So, with the rest of this world that I'm speaking, I love it because I have these conversations with people like you all day long. I live in this world. And sometimes I have to remind myself that the other things are going on. And some people might say, you're just living with your head in the sand. You're just not facing reality. But I've had debates. What can you do other than what is in your world? You can rage. We can complain. We can all that stuff. It's wasted energy. It's wasted time. I've got things to build. I've got people to love. I got people to serve. I've got people to help. I've got things to do. The rest of it's wasted energy. I will, for example, vote. I will be educated. I'll be aware. But the rest of it is a distraction, no matter how good it can feel. I mean, I'm raising young drivers. And when you have those conversations, like, yeah, the other person could be wrong all day long, but you control your vehicle. Even if the other person is whatever. You're in control of your vehicle. You're not in control of all the rest of the traffic. Stay in your lane, do your thing, control your vehicle. And that's the way I live my life. And I'm so grateful that I've learned to, and I'm grateful that I've chosen to hang out with people like you. I choose who I hang out with. And so if you're out there listening and you're thinking, yeah, or whatever, my world is what it is, and it's not real pleasant, what I want it to be, you can choose what you pay attention to. You can choose who is in your world. It may take some time and some effort and rearranging, and some people around you may think you're a little crazy, but that's okay. I don't care. I have important things to do, and so do you. And this is how you create difference in the world, create resources that your family needs, respond to the crazy world that we live in of AI or politics or whatever craziness you want to choose.
David, I don't know a better way to end the conversation than with what you just said. So where can people connect up with you? Where can people find you? Where would you like people to go to get to learn more about you?
Simplest, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm David Landis, LANDIS. My website, davidlandis.me, LANDIS. But if you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, that's a great place. I post content regularly there. We can start a conversation there. I'd love to find out what you're working on, where you're at. Yeah, let's make this world and life a better thing.
One step at a time, we will do it. Sales, if you know somebody who would enjoy this conversation, please share it with them. Let David and I know via LinkedIn. When you do those shares, then we get to see it. More people find the content. The algorithm does whatever magic it does. Please do that. Let us know. Sales is a thinking process. Business is a thinking process. Life is a thinking process. How are you thinking differently about yours?